Tate Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea, I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in to this edition of the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare technology. I'm very pleased today. My guest is Dr. John Saccone, the newly appointed Chief Medical Officer at Document Storage Systems. DSS is a leading provider of health information technology solutions for federal, private, and public health organizations, and has recently announced the launch of its Juno Health commercial division, which includes the Juno EHR. So I'm looking forward to hearing about this new area of their expansion. So, Dr. Saccone, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, Jim.
I'd like to maybe take a couple of steps back before we talk too much about Juno and the Juno EHR. And I'd like to hear your opinion on some of the overall challenges which come into health IT today. You know, technology getting in the way, physician burnout, things like that. What's the level of importance of those challenges we're facing?
Well, they're all important, Jim. The EHR was originally intended to streamline workflow for the physicians and provide better patient care, more accurate patient care. But really what it did was create a lot of extra work, change in workflows, which led to a lot of cognitive stress for the end users, whether they were physicians or nurse practitioners, PAs. They had to change their workflow and adapt to the EHRs, and that caused up to 30 months of cognitive stress just trying to get used to a different workflow outside of where they were traditionally trained. What that leads to is inefficiencies in patient care. There is opportunity for medical mistakes because of physician fatigue and physician burnout. And something that we don't talk enough about is nurse burnout. Nurses are tasked with caring for a patient in usually 12-hour shifts, and they also have to write notes on the patient, and they can be very cumbersome in the manner in which they're done, so that it's not infrequent that a nurse will work a 12-hour shift and then stay an extra hour to complete nursing notes. So in some ways, even tougher for the nurses than the physicians.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned there is the change in the workflow. Essentially, when we were in a paper-based or document-based medical record system, you know, that existed for 100 years or more. And then all of a sudden, providers are being asked to do something totally different with sometimes a few days or at the most a week of training. I used to see providers who would go in and see a patient. They would come out. They'd hold up that dictaphone, and that was their process. They would dictate. Now, all of a sudden, they're at a keyboard. And it certainly was not a thing that could be resolved in a few weeks or even a few months to adapt to that whole new way of documentation and thinking about documentation. I always felt sorry for the providers who had to make that initial jump.
Yeah, and it's the biggest change in workflow is you're scrolling back and forth between screens. When you had the old paper records, everything was on one page. You wrote a soap note and your note was done. So it's really changed how long it takes to do a note. It significantly prolongs the time, and it probably adds somewhere an hour to the workday minimum.
Yeah. Another thing that I know DSS and your work has certainly focused on is the fact that as we move deeper into technology, how do we do that while not giving up the personal or human contact with the patient? Keeping that patient actually, you know, bring that the human aspects things back to care that in some terms is being lost with technology.
Well, the answer to that question is to make the technology more user friendly. The average amount of time for a follow-up visit for a specialist with a patient is about a little over four minutes, and that's direct patient care. It's over 16 minutes with the EHR, and for a primary care physician, it's over 19 minutes with the EHR and about 4.5 to 5 minutes with the patient. And what we're trying to do with streamlining Juno EHR is flip that ratio on its head so that we're spending the majority of our time with the patients. Patients have been very unhappy. Frequently in an office visit, you don't make eye contact with the patient because you're in the EHR, you're typing or you're dictating, you're looking things up. And the actual amount of eye contact, I've never read a story or read an article about how little eye contact we have, but I would say in an average office visit, you're probably less than 2 minutes of eye contact with the patient. That's very disconcerting to a patient. There's a loss of the connection with their provider, which is very important in longitudinal care.
Well, you mentioned the Juno EHR. So could you give us a high-level overview of the new Juno Health Commercial Division?
The Juno Health Commercial Division is seeking to address those problems with the traditional EHRs. Some of them are older architectures and are sundowning. Others are just older architectures but have a traditional part of the market. But what Juno's seeking to do is to improve the efficiency of the doctor experience, patient experience, so that you improve your workflow, you create more revenue, but you render better care and more complete care. And that's the EHR part of it. It also opens up the possibilities for remote patient monitoring, which is particularly important in chronic disease management, population health, so we know where to spend our dollars, that we just don't spread them evenly across the landscape. But we concentrate on the areas that will give us the most yield in cutting healthcare expenses, which really can't be sustained with the aging population.
You know, you mentioned remote patient care, remote patient monitoring. We have the technology for that, and it, to me, really offers incredible opportunities in healthcare. What's it going to take to kind of push us over the edge? Is it going to be a different reimbursement, or what's it going to take to really, see the full value in that opportunity, which is in front of us, really?
I think reimbursement is part of it. If the federal government understands that spending a little money up front leads to tremendous cost savings, I think it'll be better embraced, but it hasn't been explained well enough. I think also the patient acceptance. When patients are feeling better and they find out that they have a tie to their physician, if they have chronic diseases like heart failure or COPD, those are nervous patients. They're always waiting for the other shoe to drop, and when am I going to be back in the hospital? Well, if they go for a sustained period of time without being in the hospital and they know that they've got a tie to their physician, it creates a lot of security for the patient, and there's a lot of buy-in. I think that's going to be part of it. It's going to be patient education also. The reimbursement may actually turn out to be secondary.
You know, I know in some parts of the country, Medicaid will reimburse for remote patient monitoring by durable medical equipment companies, whereas Medicare, only the provider can bill for it. The real opportunity for remote patient monitoring, you have all those patients out there with chronic diseases, as you mentioned, to be able to monitor them and have those software systems that have trigger points, that have alerts, and somebody to manage that. And so right now in most ambulatory practices, there is nobody like that to kind of handle that. It's not for a triage nurse. It's for really a whole new staff member almost to handle those kind of dashboards, more or less, to keep track of those kind of things.
I think that's accurate.
Go ahead, sir.
I think that's accurate, and it leads to the population health part of this. There's going to be a whole new division of healthcare, population health, that is going to address those chronic disease management states. You know, the hope is that as the population ages and we get through some of the people who have not taken care of themselves as they age out, that there's going to be a greater awareness because of primary care physicians being able to spend more time in education of the patients, subspecialists being able to offer better treatments to the patient, that we're going to start to see less intense disease management, less chronic diseases, and a much harder push toward the preventive aspects of healthcare. And this will go a long way to do it.
Yeah, a little bit more specifically about Juno EHR. I know it is fully certified. Is it based on specialty practices, family practice, internal medicine? Is it based on templates for different types of specialists?
All of the above.
The
Juno EHR is an open architecture EHR, so it is customizable very easily. By the IT team. It is able to be managed by the providers if they wish to do so. It is able to be managed by their IT team, which will be trained by the Juno EHR IT team. It's actually a very simple process to tweak the system, but my idea, and I think the company's idea going forward, is to create this division of customer success, not customer service, but customer success. That, as you mentioned, is this a primary care practice? So do we build that template to a primary care practice? Is this an orthopedics practice? So we build that template to the needs of an orthopedics practice. Is this a specialty hospital that does certain things and we need more focus on, say, OBGYN? That's going to be customizable. So when the patient is seen by the doctor who uses that EHR for the first time, they already have experience with that EHR, that the training will be minimal because it is very intuitive. It creates the paradigm of the traditional workflow of the physician. You're not scrolling back and forth between screens. You're able to concentrate on the patient, spend the time with the patient, and keep your eyes on the patient. So patient satisfaction will ultimately go up, and that has big implications for hospital systems, which live and die on HCAHPS scores and LeapFrog scores, et cetera. They use them as marketing tools, but in fact, they're good certifications to have because it proves by objective criteria that you're delivering a superior product.
One of the things that we see that really initially when, I guess, March a year ago, when the country shut down and private practices, well, practices and clinics shut down all over the country, and had to pivot literally within two or three days to using telehealth options for virtual care or virtual visits. Most practices had never done one of these visits, didn't have the software. Everybody scrambled to do those kind of things. We saw a giant volume of those kind of encounters. And then it's come down quite a bit, but I believe in the last 3 or 4 months, it has leveled off, certainly at a much higher level than we saw before the COVID pandemic. Do you see that telehealth is going to continue to be a tool for providers?
Yeah, I think telehealth and virtual care, which is the extension of telehealth, will be more and more embraced by patients, particularly the hospital at home. So you have a patient who may have a DVT or a pulmonary embolus, needs only short-term anticoagulation intravenously and can be switched to oral medications, but needs monitoring and doesn't necessarily have to be in the hospital. Those are things that are going to drive down the cost of healthcare. It's a better environment for the patients, less infections that are hospital acquired. There's a lot of benefit of virtual care, not just virtual visits.
Absolutely, yeah. Let me just say for a minute to members of our audience who may have just joined us since we began speaking with Dr. Saccone, the Chief Medical Officer at Document Storage Systems. Glad to have you join us. Let's talk a little bit about the move to value-based care and the impact that's had on EHRs. Of course, for Medicare providers, this whole macro MIPS scheme that's out there, and I don't mean to be negative, use the word scheme, I use it in British term, is attempting to bring better care through or by increased reimbursement and punishing you depending on certain metrics. That whole move to value-based care, how's that affected EHRs?
Well, I think people are still adapting to where they need to be. There's a variety of solutions out there, and no one knows exactly what the right one is going to be. But I think that the more we move to that population health management part of this, keeping patients at home rather than in the hospital, and decreasing hospital readmissions is going to go a long way to creating that value that we're looking at. But to have value in a volume to value system, you have to still have the volume. So you have to be able to capture those patients in order to create the value. So the more patients you can reach and give access to healthcare at a reasonable cost, I think the healthier the country is going to be, and it will hopefully achieve the goals that MIPS and MACRA set out to do.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see if it delivers on the promise of that. I've got kind of a question for you. I've often wondered about. I was involved in the design of many EHRs and helped and worked with over 300 EHR companies on their certification process. But I was involved in patient care before this. I come from the document side of things. And so some providers are very dependent on the patient's story to come up with a good diagnosis. I often think of an infectious disease provider who needs to know not only what's going on with the patient, but if he has a rash and happens to mention that he's been going to a particular gym to work out, and another patient mentions the same thing. With EHRs, we're probably not capturing that part of the story, that might tease out some information that could be a public health kind of thing. What do we do about that? Or is that something that, you know, the patient's story? Are we losing the patient's story?
Well, I think that if you can spend more time with the patient, that's meaningful, and create the relationship that needs to be created with the patient, they're more apt to tell you things. And I can't tell you how many times as a provider, in the course of general conversation, a patient will mention, "Hey, doc, what about this? I just noticed this. I know it's not your specialty, but can I talk to you about this?" Creating that level of comfort by the rapport that you create with the patient allows you to get the real story. And they teach in doctor school for years that 90% of the time the diagnosis is made from the history. And I think that has held up over the years. You know, we need labs and imaging to confirm the history, but if you really take a careful history, the patient will lead you down the right trail. But they've got to have that rapport where they'll actually open up to you.
That's a great point. EHRs are so precise, and they can do so many things that it's kind of almost there's a tendency to get blinded by their abilities. And just the human side of the thing of, providers are so rushed for time now. And but I've read, and you can certainly weigh in and know more about me, if you spend maybe just 3 minutes really listen to somebody, you'll find out a lot of stuff. It doesn't have to take 20 minutes.
That's exactly right. And in the hospital, if you sit next to the patient's bedside rather than stand, you get a better experience. They feel like you've actually spent more time. And you may have spent an equivalent amount of time, but you have created full focus on that patient, and they get it.
Yeah. Exactly. I wanted to step back to something you mentioned a little bit earlier, the concept of an open EHR platform. What do you mean by that? How do you define an open EHR platform?
It is conformable without the need to go to the vendor and ask the vendor to make that change in the EHR, which traditionally costs a fair amount of money when you go to the vendor. So the way it's created is we teach the IT team how to do this. It's very simple to do. It's very easy to configure, and it doesn't cost any additional funds. So for smaller and mid-sized hospital systems that can't afford to spend a lot of money on EHR, it creates a nice alternative where they can customize and tweak those systems. As good as we hope it's going to be when it comes out of the box, when you start using it, it's like when you're living in a home. I wish I had put that light switch over there instead. You live with it and you start to see, maybe I could do this a little bit more efficiently, and you don't have to run back to the vendor. So it's done almost instantaneously. It can be done in just a few minutes.
I always like to ask folks probably the macro level of questions about all this. This whole move from a paper-based system to an interoperable electronic system where data is shared. And, of course, there are a million reasons data is not shared. There are cultural reasons. There's regulatory reasons. There are state-by-state systems, all those. But as far as the ultimate future vision for health IT, where you would go in almost any practice or hospital, they have your records. There's no duplicate testing necessary. Where are we in that trajectory?
Well, you know, we're beginning to see a number of solutions. You know, the 21st Century Cures Act says the patient has the right to have their information, and there can't be information blocking. That's part of the bill. And that's a good thing because it allows the patient to own their medical record. Now, what does that mean? It means that they're able to have all the information that accumulates. And there are several solutions, and Juno EHR has another product that we'll layer in with Juno EHR that we're developing also, so that a patient can have their lifetime medical record on an app, that they have a medical reconciliation that is constantly updated so that there are no medication errors, and it will include any prescription written by any provider and verified by a pharmacy, so that one of the things I fear, and I think most of my colleagues fear, are medication mistakes where you don't have the full medication list. And I call that the greatest opportunity for misadventure, because frequently a patient doesn't remember what they're taking. They don't come in with their meds. They don't have a list. And, you know, you're kind of at a disadvantage there, and bad things can happen.
I couldn't agree with you more. Something else that seems to be resolved, and maybe you have information that made me feel a little better about this, but a unique patient identifier. Now, I think the federal government still has legislation that says we can't use a social security number as a patient identifier. So patient matching. Where are we with that? How can we get that resolved? Is it resolved?
It's not resolved, and I think it's going to take legislation to do that. And one of the biggest concerns is cybersecurity. If you have a unique patient identifier, it's tied to a social security number or a biometric. How easy is that to lift from a system? I think that's going to be a key question. And Juno EHR is a very secure system. We have very high level of security. The lifetime medical record will actually not expose the patient's information. It'll be cyber encrypted. Our portal will be encrypted and safe. So we are very cognizant of the concerns for security. And I think that's the first barrier to get over before we get to some form of unique patient identification.
I'm glad you brought the issue of cybersecurity, because so many people in practices or hospitals that have access to the health information technology systems that are connected to the internet, and it doesn't take a high-level hack to get access and to do, whether it's ransomware or, you know, some kind of destructive thing, action towards data. Where are we going in that regard? How is this going to be addressed?
Well, traditionally, healthcare systems have had lower levels of security, and the ransomware people have determined that lifting credit card data is not as profitable as lifting data from an EHR. So that's why they're targeting EHRs at this point. Yeah, and you're familiar with SaaS, right? Software as a Service.
Sure.
They've actually emulated that business model, and they're calling it RAS, Ransomware as a Service. They have cybersecurity, ransomware help desks. They have customer service. It's an illegitimate business that is actually taking on the model of a legitimate business.
Well, you know, we often think of hackers as these sophisticated people and somewhere on the other side of the earth who are using all this complex knowledge to hack in. But some of these cases, it's just an employee who gets an email that says, click on this link. There's a picture of you on social media. Person clicks on it. Very, very low level hack, but a very successful hack. So that a lot of education has to be, you would hope, part of the solution.
Yes, that's, you know, phishing where they just change one letter of an email address and it looks like a legitimate email address. You're exactly right that an employee can open up an email that looks innocent and open up your whole system. And there is a concentrated effort on educating everyone who works in a hospital who has access to electronic medical records or some form of the electronic medical record, be that laboratory or radiology, whatever. They're all very well schooled now, or at least they're trying to get them very well schooled on being cognizant of the number of cyber attacks that occur on a daily basis and to be really hyper vigilant and report every suspicious email. And I think that goes across industry as well as the healthcare industry.
Yeah, that's going to be a growth industry right there all by itself. Well, Dr. Saccone, it's hard to believe that our time has totally gone by. You know, we're talking about things that are of interest to me, and I appreciate you joining us on that for sure. And I'm going to be very interested to see what the Juno EHR looks like. I'm looking forward to having a demo, as well as the whole Juno Health commercial division. So thank you so much for joining.
Thanks for the opportunity and look forward to meeting with you.
Yeah, I look forward to it too. To our audience, thanks for joining me on this episode of the Tate Chronicles. Chief Medical Officer at DSS, Dr. Saccone, thanks for coming aboard today.
Thank you, Jim.
You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tate Chronicles transmission ending now.